Kamenetsky Brothers Podcast, Brian Kamenetsky, Andy Kamenetsky coming to you Friday afternoon after the New Year. Happy New Year, Andy.
Happy New Year to you.
And Happy New Year to all of you people out there. I hope it was a good one. It was a shitty one for the Lakers, quite frankly. I can't parse that. It was really bad.
It was a very bad New Year's Eve. Yeah. And thus far,
that game had to have spoiled their New Year's Day.
Yeah, and the returns for 2014 thus far, let's just say they've been slim.
All right, so lots to unpack today, as they say. It's a day, therefore we have days to talk, something to talk about with more point guard injuries and a Pau Gasol trade rumor. Any day,
the more things,
means there's more of that.
The more things change, the more they stay exactly the same.
We'll talk a little bit about Mike D'Antoni's job security and whether or not he should have some, at least in the short term. We got Ack. Ack coming up later. I am sipping on a Fresca that is as refreshing as any Fresca I've ever had. That is a non-sponsored message.
Like to get on board with this podcast,
we're in it.
We'll drink Fresca the entire show.
And so all of that coming up as soon.
What a Fresca.
You can't see it, but I'm actually doing that thing where you take the can and you rub it over your head, like the temple. Where
I'm actually doing the show sitting inside a tub of Fresca. It's just that refreshing.
Very crispy. Tingly in your nether regions.
I have never felt better than sitting naked in this tub of Fresca.
Carbonated.
Why more people don't do this? I'm telling you, Kobe would be back on his feet if he just spent a couple hours in a tub of Fresca.
That is gross. We'll get to all of that as soon as we bang through today's headlines. We'll start in Brooklyn, where earlier this week, as a guest on NBC Sports Radio's Amani and Iton show, free agent coach Stan Van Gundy said the Nets have, quote, looked like a Bush League organization much of the year, end quote. I criticized everything from the effort to roster construction. That's a mild criticism mixed with some mild defense of Jason Kidd. The Nets are 11-21. They've lost 7 of 10. This all begs the question, Andy, how long until Mikhail Prokhorov has Stan Van Gundy killed?
Yeah, the minute I heard this quote...
Because can't argue with anything else that he said.
No, but the minute I heard this quote from Stan Van Gundy, I thought about that scene in the movie Eastern Promises where Viggo Mortensen's character, a heavy with the Russian mob, does that two fingers to the throat gesture to Naomi Watts' uncle and then points at him. You know, the next time Prokhorov's either in Stan Van Gundy's presence, he's going to do that to him, or he may just send a heavy down to Florida.
He doesn't need to be in his presence.
Yeah, he's going to send a guy down to do that, but he might just give him the throat gesture as a warning.
Yeah, and by the way, we could see Jeff Van Gundy abducted or something like that as some form of leverage.
I know nothing.
Yeah, can't argue with what he said. You can argue whether or not it was smart to say it.
It's never smart to say anything about a man of Prokhorov's connections in the Russia.
In the motherland.
Mm-hmm.
All right, next story.
Carmelo Anthony, Bryant, was mad as hell and decided he wasn't going to take it anymore. New Year's Eve day, he went on Twitter offering a giveaway contest to fans, the prize being a pair of his sneakers, and a Knicks fan replied on Twitter by saying, "How about you win a ring? You fucking kill me, man. Rooting for you all the fucking time, and you always disappoint me." Carmelo on Twitter responded by saying, "I didn't ask for your glazed donut face ass to root for me anyway." In which the guy responded, "Ouch, man." Thoughts?
Well, I mean, the big thing, of course, because, you know, media has totally lost touch with any sense of fun. Of course, the serious media uses this as an indication that the Knicks are really coming off the rails.
And that the losing is getting to Carmelo.
Carmelo's finally at the end of his rope and all of these other... And he, by the way, he may be.
Right. But it's got nothing...
This is not an indication
of
that.
No.
This is a guy who went off and made all kinds of F-bombs and this and that. Well, all Carmelo's trying to do is give away a pair of shoes. And what the serious media, misses... is how brilliant a response. I don't know what exactly glazed donut face means.
Just go on the internet, but you'll see a bunch of memes.
Right, but it's really insulting sounding.
Yeah,
it's one of those things, it's like, god damn, that's an insulting
thing. Well, what's great
about
it, too, is it It's insulting, and it definitely puts the guy in his place as he responded. Ouch, man. And I love, too, the implication or, you know, the inference from that response of, you know, hey, there's a nice way to say that, Mello. You know, sure, right. I just dropped a bunch of F-bombs on you when you were giving away free sneakers, but, you know, you can still be polite about this. What I love about that response is it's, you know, unlike a lot of other, you know, insults, it's not homophobic. It's not misogynistic. It's not racist.
It's vaguely, I guess, offensive to donuts.
It's safe for work. It's perfect. And Mello just shoved this guy in his place, and good for him. Because, you know, a lot of times...
If you're coming at somebody with F-bombs and this and that, you're not supposed to interact with fans that way or whatever, but that guy, I mean, that was an aggressive tweet.
Especially when Mello was doing something nice for fans. He was actually looking out for his fans. You know, 9 out of 10 times, you're right. It's better just to not even respond. But when the reason this conversation began is because you were doing nice something for his fans, Mello's right. F that glazed donut face ass dude.
Especially if you're hanging on to glazed donut face as your insult.
No, that's a good one.
All right, next story. We'll stay in New York because it's such fertile ground this season. J.R. Smith, since the start of the season, Andy, the general consensus that his brother Chris Smith of the Knicks was the worst player was the worst player on an NBA roster by a lot. It wasn't even close. A lot of rumors, Andy, that they gave Chris Smith his guaranteed contract of a hair under $500,000 to ensure that J.R. Smith would re-sign. The Knicks have undone that roster move this week, cutting Chris to sign Jeremy Tyler. JR took to Instagram and posted, quote, "You know the sad thing about betrayal? It never comes from an enemy." He wasn't referencing the Knicks specifically, but that's basically what we all assumed. JR has since said he was, quote, "over it and is just worried about playing," which makes sense because he's been god-awful this season as well. Andy, good move for the Knicks to undo the Chris Smith roster spots.
Yeah, absolutely. The guy wasn't contributing anything for the
team. He wasn't even contributing to the D-League
right,
team.
Exactly. I mean, Chris Smith has thus far, as a professional basketball player, been a disaster. I don't know what Tyler's going to do for them or not, but he certainly can't hurt. And I love, too, though, that JR is saying, you know, "I'm not worried about it now. It's my brother's problem now. I'm over it. I'm fine with it. I have no problems with anybody. He's going to go to war with Tyler," all that. I love, too, that, I mean, it says a lot about JR Smith's character that as somebody shooting 35% from the field, averaging about 12 points on 12 shots a game, who just got suspended for a drug violation and didn't inform the Knicks of needing off-season knee surgery before signing his contract, that he's not going to leverage this clout and use it against the Knicks somehow. I mean, because think about, what if JR decides, "I'm going to demand a trade"?
You know what?
Do you not? The phone is going to be ringing off the hook in New York.
We're talking about a true pro.
Yeah, absolutely.
Professional.
They need to extend him now while they have the chance.
All right, last one.
It's been a tough first season as a head coach for former Laker champion player and coach Brian Shaw of the Denver Nuggets, who the Lakers are going to be hosting this Sunday. The team is currently 14-17. They're on an 8-game losing streak as of this recording. And backup point guard, the 61-year-old Andre Miller, was suspended 2 games after an in-game dust-up with Shaw. And Brian, you and I have both been proponents of Brian Shaw's coaching potential when he was an assistant with the Lakers and then an assistant with the Pacers. Given everything that's going on right now in Denver, does it give you any pause about his potential in the future?
I'd be lying if I said I was following the situation in Denver that closely. They're a team that was really good last year, lost their coach, lost their best player, Danilo Gallinari, and most people figured they would be...
And lost their GM.
Most people figured they'd be a fringe playoff team this year. They got off to a terrible start, won a bunch of games, had some injuries, have kind of come back a little bit. I mean, look, Andre Miller is a great, great player. It's the most unbelievable thing about this whole thing is this is going to be the 8th and 9th games of his career, his 183-year career that he's missed. In 15 years, I think it is.
He's been missed incredibly durable.
9 games, and 2 of them, at least, are because of this suspension.
Well, that and Andre Miller spoke. Right. That was a pretty amazing development
as
well.
True. You know, obviously, he's a salty guy, but he's also very well-respected.
Get off my lawn!
He is. He's totally that guy, but he's also very well-respected in that
Gran
locker room.
That movie, Gran Torino, was based on Andre Miller.
you know, so... It's obvious, it's not good, but I like what I've seen about how Shaw's handled it, where he said, you know, they had practice the next day, but instead of actually practicing, every player met with the coaching staff individually where they could all clear the air, say what needed to be said, whatever it might be. I can't say if his rotation, I know he's been playing a really long rotation, which he's going to be cutting down. I can't say.
He juggled the rotation a lot for a while. Even beyond
Miller's
JaVale
not playing,
McKee's
which
injury.
Is part of the reason that he's so mad. I don't know if he's doing a great job, a bad job, or whatever, but I will say the way I've seen this, what I've seen about how he's handled this, I think is good. And I think it shows that he's got what it takes to be a manager of people, which is really what being a head coach at the NBA level is. Nuggets probably end up about a 500 team, which is about what people figured that they would be. Okay, and so, this gives him a chance to grow in with that team.
Yeah, people forget Doc Rivers was not Doc Rivers until the Celtics eventually brought in Kevin Garnett and Ray Allen and a better supporting cast. Until then, he was the guy that people wondered when the Celtics would finally fire.
All right, so those are your headlines for today. Looking forward to seeing Brian Shaw.
Absolutely. He's a good dude. We both really liked him a lot when he was with the Lakers.
Let's get into the Lakers, Andy.
Let's do
because
that.
Like the Nuggets, the Lakers have been Nuggets-esque in their performance of late.
They've been playing like a bunch of glazed donut face asses of late.
They will head into Friday night's game. We're recording ahead of that, so we don't know the result, obviously. Guess, but I was asked on time. I did Time Warner Thursday night, and humble brag.
I'm surprised you didn't introduce yourself as television star.
Television's Brian Kamenetsky. You may recognize me from such roles as that guy who was on Time Warner last night.
By the way, I was watching the Sugar Bowl and was during a commercial. My daughter was in the room with me, by the way, my 2.5-year-old daughter. And I flipped over to Access Sports when you're on there, and my daughter immediately looked at the TV, pointed, and yelled, "Hi, Uncle Brian!"
That was me.
It's very cute.
So they asked me, I was asking
you. She also, too, by the way, thinks that any bald man is you when she sees him on television, including one time a bald black man she actually thought was you as well. My daughter's kind of a baldist.
Yeah.
She thinks all bald people look alike.
That's a little offensive. I was asked, do you think the Lakers are going to win? Sure, why not? But the reality is, Andy, no, I don't. I don't think they're going to win any game that they play because the way the roster is set up, and we'll get into this, they've lost 6 straight heading into Friday's game. They went 4-11 in December, and January's coming up. It's brutal, and they have no players. I don't think they're going to win any game. When we were at the Sixers game.
Are you predicting an 0-15 January?
I'm predicting they're going to lose every game for the rest of the season. They're not going to. They will win some of those games. But they're right now, with the players that they have available. We talked about this when they played the Sixers. Everybody was complaining on Twitter. They were all yelling at the team, whatever. How can you possibly? The Sixers had more talent available to them, more talent in their starting lineup than the Lakers did. The Lakers have no talent by NBA standards on their roster. They are down to Kendall Marshall as their starting. Of all the guys that they had, the one position that they thought they had too many guys, they're now playing Kendall Marshall.
They are also, and this is a bigger problem, down to Kendall Marshall as their backup point guard and the third string point guard. It's all Kendall Marshall. He's like Michael Keaton.
It made him a great pickup for my fantasy team, but it's incredible what has happened to this team because it's not just that they've gotten hurt, Andy. It's that they've gotten hurt in the worst, most unbalanced way possible. Like normally, if you're a coach, a guy gets hurt, a couple guys get injured. Like, all right, well, I've got some playing time problems. I can't get guys on the floor. This at least silver lining, it clears a log jam. Well, no, it doesn't because he's got no guards, D'Antoni. And 18 centers. So he still can't get Kamen and Hill and Powell and Sean Williams and the whole mess sorted out. But meanwhile, he's got nobody on the wing
and
in the backcourt.
He really actually ought to just start playing Powell at the point. Because how much worse would Powell really do than anyone else he can put out there? And then it alleviates that logjam a little bit. Powell's going to create some mismatches if he posts up in terms of who guards him. It's worth a try, and probably he'll have to do it at some point.
Yeah, I mean, there is no backup. You can call Jody Meeks a backup point guard. He doesn't want you, you to. Call he's, him afraid, he's afraid he's going to get hurt.
You can call him whatever you want.
No, I mean, it's not. I mean, it's not just
he and Nick Young, who, by the way, are the only guards available at this point. They're not point guards.
No.
They're not even close.
It's not just a question of, oh, I can dribble. You've got to be able to read a defense. You have to see angles. You have to set guys up the proper way. See where the help is coming. You know, time the pass off of pick and roll. All these other things. It's really a testament to how good Kobe is. They could do both of those things at the same time.
I've always said if Kobe wanted to, he could have been an elite point guard. If that's the direction he had wanted to take his career, he absolutely could have been.
I mean, but is there any reason at all? And I understand that Lakers fans always want their team to win, always want them to play hard. That playing hard is a whole separate issue. Is there any reason at all, Andy, that you think to have any kind of expectations, whether they're playing as bad as that game was, Milwaukee on New Year's Eve, or Philadelphia or Utah on Friday, Denver slumping on Sunday, that they're going to walk out on any NBA floor right now and be the better team?
No, my expectation is never that they're going to win. That doesn't mean they can't win. There's definitely going to be games that they do win. There's going to be times when either somebody takes them lightly or the Lakers just really cobble together,
everybody's
together
on their
a great sum of their parts. The breaks will go their way, whatever. They're going to win games, but expecting it? No, right now there is nobody on their schedule. I looked at January. You look
and
at them,
it is a bear.
But even, I mean, I'll go through
it's
right now.
It's a bear.
They go from hosting Utah, this game we mentioned, to Sunday hosting Denver, at Dallas, at Houston, at the Clippers, hosting Cleveland, then the Grammy trip where they go to Phoenix, Boston, Toronto, Chicago, Miami, Orlando, New York, then come back to host Indiana, Charlotte. Some of those games are more winnable than others. Right. Some of those teams are not very good.
Some of the Grammy trip teams are not there, but the Lakers have been terrible on the road. So, I mean, that's an issue.
But either way, it does not matter who they play. The game might be winnable, but you would never expect it.
There's a talent deficit. And it's a shame because they had something going that was at least entertaining, where you're like, okay, they're going to struggle to be around 500. There's no real hope for a bigger thing, but the product is still entertaining. There's no way for
well,
this.
Well, so much
there's
that though,
no
was, so much of
work.
It though was predicated on point guard play. Steve Blake and Jordan Farmar were playing very well,
and
they were very good at orchestrating that offense. Right now, they have no ability to generate easy looks, which in turn creates turnovers. It creates empty possessions. And it hurts their defense both just in terms of being put in transition, but also just psychologically.
Right, that's the
big
thing.
It is brutal when you can't score.
I was wondering, I wondered what would have the, it was maybe a couple shows ago where, like, you know, the camaraderie's been great, the chemistry's been great, and all that stuff. What happens when they lose 16 of 20? You know, can they keep that together? Because I'm like, some streak like that is coming. It came faster than I expected because more guys got hurt. I thought Farmar was coming back. He came and he left. Kobe came. And he was gone again. All these things. Xavier Henry is out. And all the, you know, think about this. Losing Xavier Henry was a huge deal.
This is a guy that came into training camp without a guaranteed contract.
Right, this was a problem. They lost Xavier Henry.
Their quasi point guard.
Right. And so it leads to some funny stuff. We were watching the game. You know,
a rabbi. Right.
New Year's was obviously a tremendously unpleasant New Year's Eve, that game. And people were upset, and there's, you know, the Philadelphia game. A lot of people calling for Mike D'Antoni's head because the wheels really have come off the wagon. And it's not that the idea that the Lakers would change coaches going forward is so ridiculous, that D'Antoni's doing such a brilliant job that nobody else could replace him. Nobody else could possibly replace him. That's not the issue.
No, he has yet to be erected a statue, nor, frankly, does he deserve one at this point.
But anybody who, I mean, if you're really, really, truly calling for D'Antoni's head.
Now. Bring him into Mitch's office and tell him to get his shit and get the hell out of El Segundo.
He's not keeping up to the standard of the Lakers. You so miss the point of big picture what that would say about the Lakers and what that would say about Jim Buss and how it would impact their ability to hire the next guy. The superstar coach that I guess you want, you man who wants Mike D'Antoni fired now because the Lakers aren't playing up to standards. You just don't get it.
No, I mean, first of all, it's a bad idea. Before we even get to that, there's the question of, really, if you're firing Mike D'Antoni now, and this is something I wrote about in the Land of Lakers blog, you need to ask yourself why. Like, in terms of what has he done this season, you know, forget last season. Last season's last season, and the Lakers decided nothing happened last season.
You can't undo that decision and now decide Phil Jackson is your coach.
But really, what has he done to get fired this season? Are you really looking at the options he's had at his fingertips and say he has not utilized them well enough to keep his job as a coach? If anything, it's been more impressive what he's managed to do for the majority of this season, given all the issues they've had, than you looking at D'Antoni going, well, he's underachieving. Yeah, there's things that he does that I disagree with at times. I think he juggles too much with the rotation beyond reasons of just injury forcing his hands. I think there's times where, similar to Mike Brown, even when you have bad options, you just need to settle and let these bad options catch a rhythm.
Although, in fairness, he hasn't even been able to do that.
No, but with the front court, he's been able to do it more with the front
court.
That's what I'm talking about. With the front court, he could, you know, it was tweeted out from Shootaround that he's going to be going back to Pau and Sacre now. I mean, at this point,
he's mixing and matching.
Settle on something. And, you know, D'Antoni clearly suffers a lot from foot and mouth disease. I mean, he while I often find what he says hilarious, it wouldn't kill him to occasionally
count to five.
Yeah, install a self-filter, that sort of thing. But when you really look at what would be considered a fireable offense this season, what's he done? Who would do better
There's no coach in the NBA who can make, currently working or not, that would make this team. Again, we go back to what we were talking before. Who's their best player? Nick Young? Powell, I mean, should be, but he hasn't played that way.
The majority of this season, their best player has been Steve Blake, and no disrespect to Steve Blake, but if these are your best players, your team is in a lot of trouble.
The bigger problem, and I agree with you, I think that you're absolutely right, and because of that, if you fire D'Antoni now, it doesn't send, if you're one of these people who thinks, you know, you have to because he's not upholding the standard of the Lakers, and then you're sending the exact opposite message. What you're saying, if you're Jim Buss, is we don't understand what coaches do and what impact they have and what control they have over the final product. And so you run Mike D'Antoni out of town. The next guy coming in, you want Stan Van Gundy. We were talking about him before. You want Byron Scott.
George Karl, Lionel Hollins. None
of those guys are going to pick up this job in the middle of the year. They want to see, is Kobe going to be healthy? They want to see where the team's going, what they might do in free agency and all that kind of stuff. And start in this offseason. You're not going to, you get Kurt Rambis up until the end of the year. That's what they would do. The next guy is sitting there going, well, shit, they just ran D'Antoni out of town.
On the heels of running Mike Brown out of town.
When he's got no players, Kobe's hurt, all these other things. These guys are insane. What's going to happen next year when Kobe gets hurt or the team underperforms?
How secure is my job ever?
Exactly. And so if you want to look like a stable organization that can draw the kind of guy that you're looking for, Lakers fan who wants Mike D'Antoni fired now, it's a bad idea. You just have to wait. Right. Replace him over the summer? Fine. I don't care. You just got to wait. And I've said the whole time I thought D'Antoni would ultimately was undone from the beginning by how the Lakers, the process of hiring him, would eventually force his firing. I've thought that for a long time. And I think it will eventually happen, whether it's this offseason or next. But you just can't do it now. Can't do it. You have to look at optics and these kinds of things and what it says, what message you're actually sending versus what message you want to in this.
Especially now, too, I think it's bad timing with it on top of it, because we're coming off, an off season where George Karl was fired as reigning coach of the year. Lionel Hollins was fired after taking the Grizzlies to the Western Conference Finals. Vinny Del Negro, say what you want about the guy, guided the Clippers to the greatest season in franchise history, was shown the door. Stability has been terrible for coaches of late. And coaches have talked outwardly about being, perceived as completely disposable right now. And I don't think you want to feed into that if you're the Lakers. I don't think you want to.
All right. So it is a story that will develop. They could can him. Maybe should. Don't know. But it can't do it now. In the meantime, though, that's a long-term story. We have Pau Gasol trade rumors.
Stop me if you've heard this before.
The new one, the one we are currently working through.
Just to get people up to speed.
The rumor du jour. That means rumor of the day.
What's the soup du jour?
Bread. What's the soup of the day?
Bread.
The soup of the day is bread. The proposed deal would send Pau Gasol to Cleveland for Andrew Bynum, sort of, and maybe stuff. And what seems to be holding up the deal is stuff. The Lakers, Andrew Bynum has a unique contract that allows a team to...
Anything with Andrew Bynum is kind of unique.
Yeah, allows the team employing him to waive him and save the second half of his contract, the other $6 million of his deal. So the Lakers or any other team could acquire Andrew Bynum, who has been suspended indefinitely by the Cleveland Cavaliers.
Well, no. Don't make this sound worse than it is, Brian. He is no longer suspended. He's getting paid to stay away from the team.
Oh, okay.
He is no longer suspended.
Oh, good. Well,
come on. I don't want to make Andrew Bynum sound like a malcontent.
I apologize.
That is not fair to the reputation he's built up very, very steadily over the course of his career.
His situation has evolved in ways that I was not aware of.
That's not fair to do for him after all the hard work that's he's true. Put into his public image.
So any team who acquires Bynum can waive him and save the other $6 million
January 7th.
By January 7th. It has to be done. So that's about 4 days away. And this, you know, the talks were going, and then as talks do, whenever there's a deadline, the talks stall. And then the talks will start going again, and then they will stall. Basically, this is going to go right up to that January 7th deadline, and the Lakers will decide whether or not they're going to get enough from Cleveland to do it. Cleveland will either say it's buying them and nothing, or they'll throw in a maybe. They've got a bunch of picks, including some less valuable ones like Miami's first-round pick, which is a high 20s, you know, at worst. They've got some that, you know, that could be in the mid first round or something like that, or some young players, whatever it might be. First thing first, if it was just Bynum's contract, which they can then waive and they'll use it to get under the luxury tax, the repeater tax line this year. So it gets them under it a year earlier. And that's all.
Dainu.
Would it be enough? That's Passover. Would it be enough, Andy?
Well, first of all, I think there's a question we didn't ask. Would you make this deal with the prospect of keeping Drew?
Would I?
Will they?
Two different answers. Would I? Sure. Would they? No.
No, okay. I think
there is no less a chance of either of us suiting up for the Lakers than Bynum.
The reason I bring this up is because I know there is somebody listening to this podcast wondering if maybe they will decide to keep Drew, because, hey, he's a young center. Maybe the change of scenery bringing him back
him
where
later.
They won
they
titles.
Later.
Right.
Look, Andy, I'd be more than happy to welcome Club 17 back into the locker room.
from our perspective as people covering Drew, he was phenomenal.
Great.
I mean,
we got another 50 games of this shit, Andy. Something.
You never really
throw me
know
a bone here.
What you're going to get next. And Drew is, you know, I mean, he's a Pandora's box that just never seems to empty. But we can both agree that's not going to happen. Would I make the deal, Brian?
Just for the cost savings?
Yes, absolutely. Because that cost savings, I don't think people realize just how much that
It saves them about 20
million.
And 25 million.
How much that matters beyond just the money, it's the ability to make progress in getting out from under the repeater tax. And
correct.
That is huge, because once you start hitting that repeater tax, the luxury tax starts becoming like almost 4.
Well, it depends.
To
it's
one.
Still that same graded thing, but if the Lakers wanted to put them, the basic thing is they got to be out from under the luxury tax in 2 out of the next
right.
3 years.
Right.
And so next year is a relatively easy year to do it, given that they have Kobe, and that's basically it on their payroll. But if they could,
well, he was almost at the luxury tax himself.
But if they could do it this year, obviously, then that means for the summer of 2015, when they have to start going out and you can start rebuilding this team and all that kind of stuff, you have the ability to spend more money on the back end of the rebuild without hitting that repeater tax.
And it matters a lot. It starts getting almost like 4-1.
It can be if you're talking about a Laker payroll that we're used to, where it's $80 million, $90 million, $100 million, absolutely.
Right.
It can be very, very punitive, where they'd be paying like $50 million extra.
And also, too, I mean, beyond just the luxury tax, people will talk about, well, you know, it's the Lakers. How much should they care about what they're spending? You know, they got the television deal, they got whatever.
There's some truth to that. I mean, I don't discount that entirely.
No, but you know what, though? There may be some truth to that. But just because you have money doesn't mean you're obligated to just piss it away. And right now, with this roster and the likelihood for success that they have moving forward, Powell's contract is essentially pissing away money. I mean, it really is. And the Lakers are not obligated as business people to do bad business for the sake of doing bad
business.
Well,
there's the other favorable aspect of the deal, frankly, is that losing Powell and getting no human body in return makes them worse, which means they're going to win fewer games, which puts them deeper in the lottery.
So, yes, I would push for stuff. But if it turned into Andrew Bynum, no stuff, take it or leave it, I'd take it.
Well, the risk is that you could, you know, because if they miss this deadline with Powell, there's another one coming up in February. And they could get potentially a better deal, or at the very least something similar, where, you know, they probably won't get the economic get-out-of-jail-free card, but they might get more stuff for the rebuild.
From what I've heard, Powell's trade value at the moment is not going to net a lot of stuff,
It really isn't at its peak, is it?
I would take that savings.
That's what's amazing to me about this proposed
deal. What would
you do? I would do it. Because he's not coming back, and it's sort of like the bird in the hand thing. It's like, could you be passing him a better deal? Probably, or maybe.
But
you might not be. And, you know, you have an opportunity in the summertime. You have an opportunity in February 20th or 26th or whatever it is. I think it's the 20th, but I could be wrong. But you might not. And it also kind of ends the thing. We all know where it goes. But the thing that is amazing to me about it, 3 years ago, Pau Gasol was the centerpiece, no pun intended, of a Chris Paul deal. And now we're talking about, you know, there was a time where people, Kevin Love? Hell no, I'm not trading Kevin Love to get Pau Gasol to get Kevin Love. I would do that. Do that now. Totally make that trade. But you know, we're talking about now moving Pau strictly for financial purposes,
which
to
is
save
the
money.
Exact same way he arrived in Los Angeles in the first place.
You know, it's the circle of life. It's just that to me is incredible and is indicative of the way his career has gone over the last 3 years in LA, which brings me to my big question of how are people, because the end is nigh. How,
if not a key,
what do you think people are going to remember him as? You know, 3 years ago, does he go in the rafters was the real question. You know, is he going to win another title? How many more titles does he have to win another one to go up? You know, does he get up there now? He's going to the Hall of Fame, all this kind of stuff. But, you know, now, after the Dallas series, after a couple disappointing seasons, after this year, which has gone really poorly, and his play has really deteriorated too, are people going to remember Pau Gasol in a really lofty, lofty place where he really was a couple years ago? Or has it been tainted to the point where he'll always be loved, but not in the way that he really could have been, or maybe I think should have been?
I think he will eventually...
The end is coming.
No, I know. The end is nigh for sure. But I think he is going back. He will eventually reach that place in terms of sentimentality and the way he's remembered. The way he should have been eventually. Think about the way Shaq is now viewed by fans, and I think in a generally positive way, and I don't think I'm speaking out of school to say he burned some bridges on the way out and was mighty, mighty unpopular with Laker Nation for several years. But I think time and distance and nostalgia usually ends up weighing out when you're talking about somebody who, generally speaking, was thought of in a positive way, or just somebody you have an attachment to. You and I have talked before, Brian, about the way our mom remembers our family dog. Now, in all positive, rosy, glowing terms.
So wonderful.
Such like, a sweet dog, Chip.
Every single day she wanted to get rid of that thing.
When we were growing up, she wanted to get rid of that dog
every
24/7.
Every
day. By the way, with good cause, because the dog was a nutcase. The dog ended up getting one day, it was kind of struck by lightning. It was sitting on a grate and lightning struck our house.
Sitting on the air vent.
And shocked the dog. The dog was never the same way again. Whenever it rained, he would wet the house. He had this habit of eating socks. They got caught up in his intestines. He actually had to have surgery to remove the socks, and he celebrated getting out of the hospital by eating socks. This dog was absolutely insane, drove our mother nuts. And then now that the dog is no longer with us, as we often say, it is Chip of blessed memory. Our mom remembers this dog so wonderfully. Yeah, she loves the dog.
I think there's some of that, but yeah, the wrinkle is the bandwagon with Pow has been bandwagonier than most. I mean, people have been on and off that thing. You know, when they didn't win in 2008, Pow got crushed and required two, you know, unbelievable seasons and postseason runs for him to get that back. When they lost to Dallas, Pow rightly got crushed, but I mean the whole team sucked, but he took a ton of abuse. The next year people have been a strong and vocal section of Lakers fans have been very quick to jump off of the Pow bandwagon, to blame him when things go wrong, to all of those things. And so, you know, if he goes and leaves here and, you know, or he stays and doesn't play well for the rest of the year, whatever it is,
I think the quicker he gets out, the better it is for him, particularly
because he's not going to have a chance to play poorly.
But I mean, yeah, exactly. But I mean, he has less of a chance to perform poorly here. The longer he stays here, I think just the worse it gets for him in terms of the things that go bad on his resume as a Laker.
Right.
But remember, bringing back to that Shaq example, Shaq used the 2003 season to heal on company time, and he's eventually been forgiven for that.
Yeah, what's really funny too is like even if he goes and if he plays well after he's traded, wherever it might be, it's also a double-edged sword because there'll be people who'll be like, look, see, he was being screwed over in LA and this is what we could have gotten here had he been utilized properly. Or they'll say he was dogging it when he was here in his last year and wasn't playing hard and could have put out more and it looks bad. Either way, if we aren't talking about this subject in 4 days, give or take, we could be talking about it in, you know, about 6 weeks. And if we're not talking about it in 6 weeks, we'll be talking about it in about 3.5 months because he ain't coming back next year.
No.
I think that is one thing that is certain.
You won't be hearing from him anymore.
All right, so those are your big Lakers stories, and at the very least, until players start returning to lineup, these are going to remain your big Lakers stories. They're not very good. They're going to lose a lot of games, maybe with Pau, maybe without. But what you can always count on, whether the games are good or bad, mostly bad, whether the team is winning or losing, mostly losing, is at. You can send us your questions. We will answer them. You send it to us at Cam Brothers on Twitter or Cam Minetsky Brothers on Facebook, and we might answer them if they are good and clever. First question comes from Greek Lakers fan Maria Fisher. If you could create a sitcom with any Laker as the main character, who would it be?
It's interesting. I thought about all-time Lakers. I didn't want to limit myself to just this roster. You know, somebody like Slava Medvedenko or Sasha Vujacic, they add a lot of comedy without even trying, so they could be interesting sitcom.
The goal
centers.
Here is good television,
right,
Andy.
No. Well, those two could be
right,
good television.
That's what I'm saying. You can't limit yourself.
Absolutely. Thought about Shaq, you know, obviously bigger than life. He can be very funny. But then I thought about, it's going to be a very broad, very corny, very predictable sitcom. If you have Shaq as a centerpiece, Michael Cooper, pretty funny guy. Robert Sacre, pretty colorful. I don't think I need to explain why Meta World Peace or Nick Young could be good centerpieces for a sitcom. But I decided that if I'm going to create a sitcom with a Laker, Brian, I want to try to create a really good sitcom, something that would really be worth watching. And the best chance to get quality acting at the center of your sitcom would be using Rick Fox. He's actually got
an actual actor.
Right, he's got experience as an actor. I thought he was very, very good on Oz, playing Jackson Vahew. And he's a funny guy. If you ever talk to Rick Fox, he's got a good sense of humor. I think he'd be willing to take some risks, maybe willing to play up his image. And I decided that I would want to create a sitcom around him where he basically plays Rick Fox, ex-athlete, and you take a kind of darkly funny look at this ex-athlete who has a lot of issues put upon him. He has to deal with the family, the ex-wives, ex-players, all the things that go with being an athlete no longer playing the game. And, too, the best part
of it is... it's basically that Matt LeBlanc Showtime thing.
Yeah.
With an athlete.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay. Or, you know, something like maybe what
What's
they do
that
with...
What's that called? It's a pretty funny show. I've seen it a couple times.
Partners?
No. But it's one word.
Right. We'll call it LeBlanc. what Louis C.K. does with Louis, or like Mark Maron's show, Maron, like a show like that. And the best part is, Brian, about a year or so ago when I was doing 710 ESPN.
Episodes.
When I was doing 710 ESPN with Rick Fox, he said on air that he wanted to be adopted into the Kamenetsky family as the third K brother and get in with the K bro business, which means if this show happens, you know who these two guys are. Producers and head writers, baby.
Nice.
So that's what I'm doing. Rick Fox sitcom.
Yeah, I kind of just looked at this year's team, and I figure your choices this year, if you wanted to narrow it down, your choices are really Chris Kamen, who could work well in a fish out of water comedy, either as the foo fish out of water, or the primary guy like out of water, or as the he could be Cayman. He could be the primary fish, so to speak. He's Cayman surrounded by a bunch of other Caymans, and then you bring in a fish out of water to be with them, and in that role, I've cast Pau Gasol. And then I would say the other option is Nick Young, who you could work as sort of a sixth man as a good sitcom. You got to treat him the same way in a sitcom as you would in basketball. You don't want to give him the lead, but you deploy him in specific situations with a very defined role, maybe as, you know, the funny boyfriend, the eccentric neighbor, you know, Schneider, whatever it
the
might be.
The pimp with a heart of gold.
Something, you know, but he's not the steak, but he's a great side dish.
Okay, that makes perfect sense. Next from at F Donk Bernard Pebenito, I guess?
I think it's Pebenito.
Pebenito. Would you rather be an ugly millionaire or a broke but handsome ladies man?
This is the easiest question we've ever got on ACK. It's if you're the first, you get to be the second. It doesn't matter how ugly you are. The problem here is if you're the handsome ladies man, the ladies will always end up leaving you for the ugly rich guy once they know that you're broke.
Right. So unless you're just one of those people that never wants to settle down, you just want to jump from bed to bed to bed and
or
guess,
are
get
so
it while
vain
you, can.
You just can't handle being ugly.
Right. And no.
If I'm rich and ugly and I have all the women anyway, all right.
No, I've seen...
That's a you problem, not a me problem.
I've seen some really ugly 100,000-aires right. with hot women. If you're a millionaire, you're going to have no problem whatsoever. It's an easy, easy question.
Next question comes from Zach Dunford. At Zach Dunford.
At Zach Dunford.
And that is @Zach_Dunford. If you were
going to be confused with Zach Dunford, who has the verified check mark.
If you were going to own an exotic pet, what would it be?
You know, Brian, I thought about this, and, you know, something like a monkey could be really cute, but then they end up flinging crap around your house and stuff like that. They're
monkeys do throw feces.
They are a high-maintenance animal.
As the old saying goes.
I love giraffes, but A, you need a really big backyard, and B, they can be kind of mean. Something like a pot-bellied pig,
unless you are
George Clooney.
I don't want to interrupt you. I don't want to skip to my answer. My first instinct, I want one of those tiny giraffes that they had on those commercials from the DirecTV where they, you know...
Opulence.
I am Epic Win. Turns out those are not real. So, anyway, I had to keep thinking.
No. God, that commercial was so good.
I love that little giraffe.
That guy, by the way, too.
When he was with the little giraffe running on the treadmill.
Gets so excited.
Yeah.
He ended up on Sons of Anarchy. He's actually a good actor. I'd never really seen him. The giraffe? Any, no, no. The actor. Okay. Opulence. I has yeah. it.
I am epic win. All right, anyway, continue. What exotic pet would you have?
I decided to actually go back to my roots a little bit, Brian. And a lot of listeners may not realize this, but you do know. There was a brief time in my life where I thought about making my career path as a marine biologist. I've always been very, very
you
fascinated.
You and George Costanza.
Right, I've always been very, very, you know this, always been very fascinated with fish, aquatic life. And then I kind of realized that there's more to being a marine biologist than getting high and staring at my aquarium. And in the meantime, I had a D in
AP bio. Not much more, but enough.
That made me think perhaps going to University of Miami as a prospective marine biologist, not necessarily the best path for me, but I've always loved fish. If I were to get, I guess, exotic animals, it would be just a huge, like, Long Beach aquarium size tanks of just basically every type of saltwater, freshwater fish, eels, small octopus, hammerhead shark, that sort of thing. That would basically be a
wing. Are those exotic, though?
Oh, yeah. I mean, okay. I think, I don't know how I define those as exotic because you don't typically walk into somebody's...
generally an eel. You get yourself a nice big eel.
No, I mean a really big eel. I don't mean some pet shop eel. I'm talking like a real eel. 4-foot eel, you know.
An eel you can hang your hat on.
I've walked into the house of a lot of wealthy people in my time. I've never seen anybody with a hammerhead shark. That would be considered exotic. In the, I guess, wing of my presumably larger house, there would be basically every type of fish and aquatic life there would be. That's my exotic animal.
All right. I thought about this in a few different ways. You know, once I was over the disappointment about the tiny giraffe, that took a moment. Do you go with like a big cat of some sort, like a puma or a jaguar or something like a lion? But yeah, you know, no.
You've got small children.
Right. No. That's an accident waiting to happen. And plus, too, I mean...
how attached were you to our youngest?
Right, but the problem, you know, getting, you get a lion, and that's the equivalent of getting, of being that like 48-year-old guy who gets a sports car. It's a midlife crisis exotic animal. You might as well get a lion driving a Ferrari. It's like, it's that bad. You were a douche.
But that's kind of cool.
You can train the lion. First of all, because they have to use the paddle shifters, which is tough.
Well, you got to make it an automatic. Otherwise, it's unrealistic.
Having a lion is a douchey thing to do. Like, taking a lion and putting it in your yard is just not cool. It's not a nice thing to do. And so from there, I thought to myself, well, if I'm going to be an exotic animal guy, and I really don't believe in keeping exotic animals. I think exotic animals are exotic for a reason. They're not supposed to be pets. Otherwise, they'd just be called animals. I want to be somebody who carries their exotic animal with them wherever they go. So you become snake guy or macaw guy or whatever. You become that guy who always has their weird exotic animal with them. And then I thought to myself, that's probably not practical either because I have to go to work.
That's not going to work well in a scrum.
No, I mean, it's like, excuse me, your macaw is blocking my television camera.
There was a time I was driving through a suburb in West Hollywood and this car just started barreling in reverse down her driveway, almost rammed into me. And I look around like, what the fuck? Oh, okay, I can see how that happened. It was this woman driving with a macaw on her left shoulder.
Right in her blind
spot.
Wings
spread.
Blind spot.
I can see how she almost hit me.
Right, so would I need to get a credential for my macaw or my snake or whatever?
I can tell you right now, John Black is not credentialing. John Black will not credential your macaw.
No, or whatever it is. And so,
nor should he.
And so then I finally saw a list of 10 exotic animals that don't pose a threat to public safety, which is a little lame, and it's like not a great way to think about your exotic pet because, frankly, the part of the fun is maybe they do pose a threat to public safety. I can get a wallaby. Kangaroos apparently make terrible pets. Wallabies are tiny kangaroos and make apparently great pets. Who wouldn't want to have a tiny kangaroo? I couldn't get the tiny giraffe. I can get a tiny kangaroo.
And you get to say wallaby in an Australian accent.
That's right. Wallaby. G'day.
That'll never get old.
Nope. All right. Finally, last question. Do I read this one?
Oh, I'm...
No, yes. It's your turn.
Yes, you're right. If finally, Brian, last question from at Warm Breakfast Jack, LBMC. I know you don't want to be Lakers-centric.
Big fan of those sandwiches.
Yeah. I know you don't want Lakers-centric.
This guy gets high.
By the way, there is...
Would you name your Twitter after sandwiches from Jack in the Box? Chances are you get high.
There has never been a restaurant that just so brazenly caters to the Stonies.
Oh, that's great. Jack.
I mean, their commercials essentially give you a contact high. I'm waiting for them to announce their 100% hemp burgers. I mean, it's just, it's amazing. Like, Jack and his co-star are always stoned to the bejesus in every single one of those commercials. They're high out of their minds. Anyway, from Warm Breakfast Jack, why is Kareem always overlooked in the all-time great conversations?
No, Andy, that wasn't the question. The question is, why is Kareem always overlooked in all-time great conversations?
Kareem is so good.
He's awesome.
Do you know, he did this move called the skyhook nobody can stop it.
He was in the airplane.
Nice. Yeah, he liked jazz, man.
Nice. Anyway, so why
he had a beard?
It's funny because, like, depending on how you frame the question, like, in some ways, I mean, you don't get past many top five lists that are, you know, certainly top seven or whatever it is in the NBA that don't include Kareem. You know, I think a lot of when people make, you know, a top five,
no, there's no question,
he's almost always in the top five. People don't leave him off of that. And when you talk about, you know, those conversations, which players have had, you know, if you want to take the whole of a player's career, high school, college, you know, pro, who was the most accomplished basketball player of all time? Kareem usually wins that one.
Right, but
it's a less common conversation.
But I was going to say, that's never how the argument is framed.
But when you get to the just strictly NBA, it's kind of...
And greatest of all time. Single greatest. What I believe our stoner friend Warm Breakfast Jack was getting
but
at.
But who knows, man? No, because really, you don't want to be limited by just one thought.
Why can't you expand your mind? Why can't the greatest player of all time actually be the 25 greatest players of all time, man?
Stop putting me in a box.
Was he supposed to say he was a kind
Unless
man?
Unless he's a Jack in the Box. In which case, put me in it. But anyway,
after midnight,
you know, the argument
I
in
took
the
down
post
3,000 calories in one sitting, man.
It would be good to know how this would play out if Michael Jordan never existed, because not only has Jordan changed the conversation to it's only Michael Jordan is the answer to that question, he's also changed it to only guys who are wing players or who handle the ball. Or
alpha dogs.
Right, or alpha dogs who are scorers, who are all of these things.
Who didn't win with a big man.
Right, whatever it is. He changed that part of the conversation too. So, you know, Kareem really isn't allowed to be. Shaq, you know, was on a career path where you could have made an argument until the second half of it where he stopped exercising and was eating too much Jack in the Box with our friend Warm Breakfast Jack.
But it's so tasty,
so
man.
Good, man. And but like, yeah.
I tell you, man, I watched Shaq one time
could have
put
said,
away 200 tacos,
you,
man.
I believe that.
You could have. That was the appetizer,
you
man.
You could have made an argument that he was on that career path. But Jordan has transformed the conversation not just about him, but also about the type of player that can do it, which is why LeBron has a chance to be that guy, but nobody else really does. It's not going to be, you know,
Tim Duncan.
Sure. So, yeah, I think that's the answer to that question. I don't think it's that. And then you add in the fact that Kareem played before, you know, TV. The NBA was always on TV. And that he was surly in a way that made him less of a media presence that he could have been remembered in a different way than maybe Magic or something like that. And, you know, but that contributes to it. But I honestly think it's the Jordan effect on both ways. That's to me is the answer.
I just don't understand why people don't expand their minds, man.
He's so tall.
He's like willowy.
Have you ever stood next to him? He's so tall. How can a man be that tall?
You know, his real name was Lou Alcindor, man. It's probably what puts off a lot of these people, man. It's political. It's too Muslim for those people, man. What were we talking about?
Is it 420 yet? But anyway, so, I mean, I don't know. Do you agree?
Yeah, I think it's good. I mean, look, I've said this before. The greatest of all time question, it's a rigged game. I mean, people want it to be Michael Jordan. Whenever people bring up this question, it's not in earnest to try to figure out if somebody maybe has surpassed, I guess, the consensus Michael Jordan. It's to actually explain
just to remind you why Jordan is best.
Kobe, right, or why LeBron, or why whoever will never be Michael Jordan.
By the way, Michael Jordan is the answer to that question, I think.
Well, you know, it's certainly, look, it certainly can be, and I think if you ask most people, it is. But you should not be laughed out of a room if you say Kareem. And I think too often, if you
Abdul-Jabbar.
Right. Well, yes, that one, not Rush. But I do think, though, more often than not, if you tried to make the argument that the greatest of all time is Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, you stand a chance of getting laughed out of the room, and that's kind of crazy.
Right,
when you
I would
think
agree.
About
yeah, and so yeah, but
it's crazy, it's man.
Crazy. It's just not right. So that's the answer to that question, and those were four outstanding acts. Thank you to everyone for sending them in, even the questions that were not that good.
But do better. As right. I always say, do better.
Try harder next time.
Because it's kind of humiliating the way people see on Twitter and Facebook you contributing these questions, and they never get used.
Right. So please be better.
It's embarrassing.
Please be better. We appreciate it. But
especially for the people who use their real names.
Stop wasting our time. Like Warm Breakfast Jack.
Yeah,
that
man.
Actually is his given name. In L.A., of course,
worked
that
out
is
so
possible.
Well, man. My parents named me this, and I love to get high.
Yeah, I can't remember. My wife and I have a game, and we like to play. You know, I have the kids at the park or something like that. And, you know, it's, you know, you come across some fun names for the children. I always like to text her and be like, you know, Ben's playing with a little boy named Flash right now. By the way, that is a true story. Ben was playing with a little boy named Flash. I forgot the other kid's name, but Flash was the other one. It was someone in Flash, and Flash wasn't necessarily the worst part of it. So
what's wrong with being named Flash, man? My brother's named Flash.
As they say, your Christian name. All right, so that's the podcast. That's basically it, I think. I think we've covered a lot of ground. Satisfied people and can do it all again next weekend.
I'm exhausted, man.
Andy's tired. He needs a nap. We'll see everybody next time.